The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Peter Boyles, helping to stop, stamp out, and eliminate redundancy on 710 KNUS.
And it's 2 minutes after 7 o'clock. Randy Corporan in for Peter Boyles. Stephen Tubbs has the con tomorrow. Peter Boyles back on Friday. Sun is finally starting to rise. Chance of snow tonight, but back up in the mid-60s by Saturday, so just hang in there. Time to get busy because we are joined from, I believe, Washington, D.C., by Congressman and Colorado State GOP Chairman Ken Buck. Ken, good morning.
Good morning, Randy.
Glad to have you, and really do appreciate it. People are very angry about some positions that you've taken. And when I reached out to you a couple of days ago and asked you some questions, you said you'd be happy to talk about it, and you always show up. And I think people should note that from the outset, that you're willing to talk about your decisions. And I really do appreciate it. So thank you for that.
Absolutely.
Start with the biggest concern and perhaps really the least important in the scheme of things. But folks in Colorado wonder why Ken Buck chose not to support the 176 Republicans who made the effort to censure Adam Schiff.
Sure, and I'll tell you, the word censure is the key there. I don't think that Adam Schiff acted appropriately. I think it is borderline unethical conduct, and I think, in fact, there is an ethical complaint against him, and the Ethics Committee will look at that. I also think the way he's handling the impeachment proceedings right now is an absolute disgrace. Republicans aren't allowed to call witnesses. We aren't even allowed to talk about the I was at the interview of the ambassador yesterday. I will be at another interview today. We aren't even allowed to talk outside of the setting about what we hear. So I am absolutely frustrated with Adam Schiff. I think he is somebody that should not be leading this effort, Democrat effort at impeachment, and I'm very disappointed that the Democrats are not calling him out. But the word censure is an important word, Randy, and I think I sent you a brief statement about that. In the last 100 years, it's been used 6 times. It's been used to censure people for felony conduct. It's been used to censure people for very serious sexual misconduct. But it has never been used in 100 years for words. And the thing that I think is so important about that is I have had several of my friends who have been who the Democrats have filed a motion to censure on because they didn't like what my colleagues in the Freedom Caucus were saying. If you are censured, you are brought before the well of the House with a full House, and you are the allegations against you are read, the conclusion is read, and then you must apologize or face expulsion. It's a pretty serious remedy and a pretty serious action. The reason I am very reticent to use it is it sets a precedent for the future. If the majority ever wants to harass the minority, all they have to do is file these motions to censure, require someone to appear in the well, and go after them in that way, and have reasons to expose. Reasons to kick somebody out of Congress if they don't comply. The other thing I think is really important, Randy, you and I both know the Constitution, and we both know the speech and debate clause protects speech in Congress. And if Adam Schiff said something inappropriate in committee or used or misrepresented or lied about the fact that he was reading from a transcript, the remedy is not censure. The remedy is not to violate the Constitution, in my opinion. The remedy is to make sure that he is called out on it, which he was. And I just think this is a really bad precedent.
Yeah, and those are very principled reasons to have considered not voting for that, as you chose to do.
No, I voted for it. I voted the same way. Every Republican voted to not table this motion, and every Democrat voted to table the motion. So I voted exactly the same as every other Republican. I didn't co-sponsor the motion.
Right, but if the vote had been allowed to come to the floor, would you have supported it?
No, and that's
okay.
I mean,
so
it didn't come to the floor.
I understand. But, you know, what is it in the history of the recent behavior from Democrats that we've seen, especially since the election of this president, that makes you think that setting some kind of a precedent while you're in the minority to set a higher standard is going to influence their behavior? You can see that from a political perspective, they're going to use every tool, every lie, every statement, or sometimes people say misstatement of the president, to continue to chip away politically at his ability to get reelected. And I feel like we are in a fight for the salvation of Western civilization right now, that if one of these socialists that's running for president somehow manages to squeak out a victory in 2020, that all of the honor and, reflections on history and everything else will mean absolutely nothing. Because right now, this is a 100% onslaught from Democrats and 50% or so onslaught from Republicans to take down this president. And does there come a time where the battle that we're in and the war that we're trying to win, you know, is greater than the individual decision to do the right thing on something that is virtually meaningless in the scheme of things?
Well, let me ask you something, Randy. Are you suggesting that half of the Republicans in the House are trying to take down this president?
No, that you're right. That's an exaggerated number. But what you see is, you know, the president uses the term lynching yesterday. And Republicans are as quick to the microphone as Democrats to condemn the use of this now new vile word that Democrats used freely to protect Bill Clinton in 1998, black Democrats, white Democrats referred to that actually legitimate effort to impeach a president as a lynching. And we have Democrats, the first to the microphone, and they don't just take 5 seconds to say, well, you know, I wish he wouldn't have used that word, but here's why this president has to be reelected, and here's why black people and Hispanic people and men and women and everybody in the country is benefiting by his leadership. Instead, we just have everybody buying it. Well, everybody, again, is an exaggeration, but so many buying into the left mantra, the left take on everything that happens. And it's really becoming a battle for survival for Republicans. And I'm hearing from Republicans here on this radio station who don't feel like you as GOP chair or taking these positions in Congress, you know, regarding Syria, regarding the censure of Adam Schiff, are understand the nature of the fight that we're in.
So Randy, one, I absolutely support this president, and two, I have gone to Democrat colleagues, and I've said to those Democrat colleagues, listen, I didn't co-sponsor this censure motion. Because this is not censurable conduct. The president, and you know it, has not engaged in impeachable conduct. And I hope you remember the principled people on our side of the aisle who did not support this censure motion when it comes time to vote on impeachment, because impeachment is something that is far greater to in significance to the integrity of this country and the process, and frankly, historically significant than any censure motion. And I will continue to take the high road, and I will continue to talk to my Democrat colleagues and appeal. Now, not all of them. There are some of them that are gone, and you know, they talked about impeachment before this president ever signed a single bill into law. But many of them are having a lot of doubts about this process. And frankly, the American people are having a lot of doubts about the impeachment process, the way the Democrats are going about it, as well as the substance of what they're bringing out. But let me make a real quick point, Randy. You are, among other things in your law practice, a criminal defense attorney. I was a prosecutor for 25 years. If I had brought a case against somebody and had mischarged that case, if I had charged them with armed robbery when it was a simple robbery, you very well know that the judge, if not the defense attorney, would have had me in front of the ethics committee and in the Supreme Court ethics board in a heartbeat because I had done the wrong thing. What matters to me is doing the right thing in the right way and getting the right result. And I believe we will get the right result in the impeachment inquiry because the facts are with us in that case.
It must be very, very frustrating to sit in on these interviews, sometimes referred to as depositions, and what I think has been almost appropriately characterized as a star chamber in the basement of the Capitol, and then not be allowed to have a transcript to review, not be allowed to talk about it on the outside. How does the majority get away with making these kinds of rules right now?
Yeah, they're in the majority, and they can set the rules, and there's very little that we can do about it other than appeal to the American people and make sure the American people understand how unfair this process is. And Nancy Pelosi, the speaker, has signed off on this entire process. She understands that she is setting a precedent that will be used against Democrats in the future. There will be a day when Republicans are in the majority of the House and there is a Democrat president. And instead of going to the Judiciary Committee, instead of having an open public hearing and bringing witnesses in and allowing the public to evaluate the credibility of testimony and again, Republicans can't even call our own witnesses to rebut the testimony of some of the Democrat witnesses. So it's an absolutely unfair process, and it is frustrating to be part of it, especially since I was in a process for 25 years that was fair, where we had an impartial judge, and we called in a jury, and we followed rules of evidence, all the things that are not occurring in this situation.
Let me give you a hypothetical regarding Adam Schiff, and then we'll move on from that topic for sure. Had the censure motion not been limited to his misreading of the president's phone call with the Ukraine president within the constraints of a congressional hearing, and instead had covered all of the many lies he told the American people outside of Congress. He said, you know, the proof of obstruction is incontrovertible. The proof of collusion, incontrovertible. It's coming. It's coming. He engaged in trying to get dirt on the president when he was called by comedians who said, we have Russian pictures of naked Trump, and he wanted to pursue that. So he has lied to the American people on multiple occasions. If the motion to censure him had been more broad, would you have considered it then?
It was more broad. And no, again,
okay.
When you're talking about words, the words can be taken down in committee. The words can be debated in public. And if we open up the standard for censure to words, we're facing a serious problem with what happens in the future.
Do you agree with me that the Democrats, and this is something we've talked about, heck, even before you became chairman or early on in your congressional career, it's a common complaint among Republicans, Republican candidates, that, you know, getting Republicans and conservatives and Tea Partiers together is like herding cats because we fight among ourselves on every issue. The Democrats get in line. A decision is made. We've seen it with the blueprint here in Colorado, that the ultimate goal is to win the election, and then worry about, you know, what decisions you're going to be able to make when you're in the governing majority. But with Republicans, it seems like we have to debate and fight and squabble over every disagreement publicly, and allow the Democrats to continue to control the narrative then and always be on the defense? Well, is there a point where drawing these fine distinctions and they're legitimate distinctions about words and the appropriate use of censure, where the idea of coming together and supporting this president as a body to get that enthusiasm, to get the silent majority of, or at least the silent mass of conservatives to come out of their shells and express their support for this president, where the idea of winning is the bigger good, the greater good.
And what's the question, Randy? Because I agree with what you're saying, and I think that I have continued to talk about the fact that by engaging in impeachment, this Congress is not passing the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement, which would have great benefits for middle-class America, great benefits for the economy in America. We are not fixing the immigration problem. We are not building a wall as we should. We are not dealing with the Mideast situation as we should. Congress has abdicated its responsibilities to pursue a path of impeachment. That's not something that the press wants to talk about. So part of what the Democrats have, one of the huge advantages they have in mobilizing their base and unifying their base, is they have a unified voice in the media, and we just don't have that voice. Getting the word out about how terrible the process is and how little evidence they have that's actually impeachable, which I don't think they have any evidence at this point, is nearly impossible because the media just doesn't want to cover that.
You wrote an excellent piece that people can find at foxnews.com. I assume you tweeted it. People should be following you at your Twitter handle, which is Rep. Ken Buck, Rep. Ken Buck. And you really had an opportunity in that platform to break down just how disastrous and inappropriate this impeachment process has been for Democrats. And you're absolutely right. The media, no matter how much podium pounding you were to do, the media will never cover it. But given the fact that the media will cover every criticism, every disagreement that Republicans have with this president, does there come a time where unity among the party, inspiration for the base, and just simply focusing on trying to change the narrative or at least not join in with Democrats and the mainstream media on their narrative becomes more important than drawing these individual distinctions?
Well, I think that's a great point. And I think when you talk policy, you will find unity among Republicans on issues like tax reform and issues like confirming conservative judges and issues like the trade agreements between USMCA and China. When you get to the more divisive language that the president uses, you're not going to find unity. And so the president, in some ways, has got to lead and lead in a unifying way. If we were to constantly be talking from the White House and on the Hill about the benefits of these trade agreements, I think we would have a chance of drowning out. It would be absolutely unified, and there would be a chance of drowning out a lot of this impeachment talk, because our you would see the stock market jump 1,500, 2,000 points within a week of the USMCA being considered and passing on the Hill. And so, yes, I think that there are a lot of unifying messages that we could bring forward.
But, of course, you've got a president who's a street brawler and is going to continue to fight and continue to be provocative and continue to distract the media away from their story of the day by having them chase him down another rabbit hole. And I think it's incumbent upon Republicans to, if they truly support this president, to understand the nature of this president and the unusual but successful way that he got himself elected in his first run at political office ever. And so, we're going to run out of time, and we've got to spend a little bit of time talking about Colorado. What is your time like?
I've got a little time, Randy.
Do we have time to take a break and get you for another segment, or do we need to push? Okay, let's do that then. Let's take our break. When we come back, we'll take off the Congressman Ken Buck hat, put on the Colorado State GOP chairman hat for Ken Buck, and see what's happening in Colorado. The November elections are just around the corner, and people I trust say our performance in those elections will be an indicator of our performance for 2020. We'll get Ken Buck's take on that and much, much more when we return on the Peter Boyle Show here at 710 KNUS.
Now, back to the Peter Boyle Show.
Randy Corcoran here for Peter Boyle's. We'll get right back to our guest, Congressman Ken Buck, also the Colorado State GOP chair. And since we've got another segment with you, Ken, let's stay in Washington, D.C. for just a minute, getting a lot of questions about your letter to the Secretary of State, joined by a couple others from the Colorado delegation, asking the president to reconsider his limitation on refugees. The number is 18,000, as I recall.
Yeah, at the time when President Reagan was president, we had 200,000 refugees admitted annually to the United States. The number has decreased to 18,000, in large part because of the number of illegal immigrants who are coming into this country seeking asylum. The request that I made was that we recognize that we need to be more efficient in deporting those who are not seeking asylum in good faith, do get that process done more quickly. I recognize and agree with the president that we can't have an increase in refugees because we only have so many people that are able to process refugee applications as well as the asylum side of the picture because of the number of illegal immigrants coming into the country. And so what I'm asking is that we are more efficient on getting rid of people who are coming here illegally so that the people who are stuck in a bad situation, many of them Christians in the Middle East and other religious minorities that are being persecuted, are allowed into our country.
Don't we need to get control of the border, get through this political dynamite that's being thrown at the president every single day before we spend a whole lot of time worrying about a system that is so overburdened? You're always, you know, quick to vote against unnecessary spending. I understand that the cost of refugees in the U.S. can be as much as $5,000 to $6,000 per person per month. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that. But I once again, when we're in this fight for the survival of our nation, to stop a socialist from taking over the presidency, to push back against the nonstop media, college campus, and Democrat narrative, why are we picking these areas of disagreement and picking these fights with the president right now?
Randy, that's not fair. You have been very fair to me every time I've gone on. This is not picking a fight with the president. And my request to the president was a letter. I haven't been out holding press conferences and bashing the president. I've sat down with Ken Cuccinelli. I've sat down with Secretary Pompeo. We've had discussions about this. They absolutely only lowered this number because of the incredible stress that we've had on from illegal immigration in this country. This is not a fight. This is a suggestion. I think this president is very compassionate and very understanding of the situation in the Middle East. We have in other parts of the world, frankly. This isn't just a Syria problem or an issue that exists in one part of the world, but we are a country of immigrants. We've always been proudly a country of legal immigrants. And I think that having more legal immigrants in one category and a lot less of the illegal immigrants is something we should strive for. And so I wanted to make the president aware of my thoughts, and some other members joined me in that. But this is not a fight at all with the president.
Well, that's good to hear. You know, I hear from folks who say that a lot of these, for instance, these H-1B immigrants are taking American jobs. And my understanding in looking at the numbers is that we're actually having trouble filling some of these jobs, which is why an increase in H-1B visa applications has been requested. What's the status on that, bringing more outsiders in to fill American positions?
So there are jobs that traditionally we have very difficult time filling with Americans. And in my district, in eastern Colorado, Randy, having Americans in the fields picking watermelons or cantaloupes or honeydew melons in the Rocky Ford area, for example, very rare. We have a program that has worked very successfully where folks typically from south of the border come in, they work for 7 or 8 months, and they leave in sort of a temporary ag situation. They want to leave, and they know that if they follow the rules, they'll be welcome back the next year. That kind of program works well. High-tech workers that you're talking about, I've had people at Microsoft and other companies talk about the fact they've had to open facilities in Canada because they can't get enough of the type of engineers that they need to do the work in this country. So we're increasing the tax base and revenue for other countries when we should be doing it here. It's a delicate balance. We are involved in more STEM programs around the country right now, trying to produce more young people graduating from college that will be more prepared for the workforce of the future. And I think those programs are going to be really successful. In the meantime, we do have a shortage of workers with those high-tech backgrounds, and we're going to have to continue to bring those highly qualified people in from other countries.
7:33, about 27 minutes to go until 8 o'clock. We'll be joined by a conservative statesman, the elder statesman of Colorado, John Andrews, in the 8 o'clock hour. We're continuing our conversation with Congressman Ken Buck. And Ken, let's bring it home to Colorado. The Ted Trimpo was on yesterday morning with George Brockler on this show, and he said right now if the vote were to be held that a Hickenlooper could beat Cory Gardner about 2-1, that's what their internal polling shows. And one thing that I have learned in developing a relationship with Trimpa is he is willing to tell the truth as he sees it. And obviously he was very instrumental in the blueprint, those structures, the big money that pours into the state continue to work their magic in turning Colorado blue. And so people are asking, what is happening with the Colorado GOP? What is happening with outside organizations? Have we actually found any better billionaires to help us push back in the state of Colorado?
I think we have great billionaires in Colorado and elsewhere that are interested in Colorado. But I do think that they have built over the last 16 years a structure. They have invested heavily in that structure, and they are benefiting from that. We are doing our best, and obviously it's not within the party. Most of the work that we're talking about right now is work that goes on outside the Republican Party and Democrat Party on behalf of the party or the candidates, but goes on outside. And so there are efforts to build that structure for the Republican Party. It's going to take us a while to catch up. I believe that Colorado is a center-right state. If you look at the ballot initiatives last time, the center-right position won every single ballot initiative, and we lost every single statewide race. I don't agree with Ted. Oh, I suppose Ted could be right in terms of if you took a snapshot right now. I don't know that. But John Hickenlooper has never faced an opponent like Cory Gardner. The difference between being a governor and being a senator is, as a senator, you have to take tough votes every day. As a governor, you are doing things that help people. You're improving roads. You're improving
not in Colorado.
K-12.
Not in Colorado.
No.
You're not. Go ahead.
So I think that when the money comes into Colorado, and it will be a huge amount of money, because we're talking about future Supreme Court justices and really the future, not just of Colorado but of America. In Colorado, you're going to see a very stark contrast between the John Hickenlooper that people have known for the last few years and the John Hickenlooper who is running for office. He has been able to brand himself in a positive way with the help of the media again, and he won't have that help. And when he when the truth is told about John Hickenlooper, the numbers with Cory Gardner are going to look much different. I think Cory is the best candidate that we could possibly put up for that position, and I think he's going to do a great job.
I pray from your lips to God's ears that that is correct. You know, it seems to me that what Republican leadership is doing is trying to change the president, when in fact the message that should be garnered from the president's victory and the president's success so far is that you can't do politics as usual anymore. You can't try and play to the middle in order to win elections. Being polite and civil in these debates when you've got an Alinsky-fueled left that is so crazed right now because they just can't believe that Hillary Clinton is not the president of the United States, neither can she, that are Republicans learning the message that Donald Trump is providing on what it takes to actually win in the 21st century?
So, Randy, I think that I think we have learned a lot of lessons from Donald Trump. But I think the important thing that we need to do, as you mentioned earlier, the Democrats come together and they focus on winning. It is time for Republicans to acknowledge that there are people that we disagree with in the party. We have different positions, sometimes very insignificant differences, sometimes more significant differences. But if we don't come together and we don't get Cory Gardner elected, we don't win back the state Senate, we don't get Donald Trump elected in Colorado, we're making a serious mistake because we are handing over to the left the keys of power, and we have got to unite, and we've got to make sure that we are willing to acknowledge that there are people that aren't 100% like us, but we're going to win with the very best candidates we can put forward.
Yeah, my fear, though, as I heard those messages when I held my nose and voted for John McCain, I did the same thing when I held my nose and voted for John or for Mitt Romney. Now we've got a president who I was skeptical of initially and has got me so fired up, a base in Colorado that is so incredibly fired up. And I just worry that we're using the same messages and kind of the same strategies that have failed Republicans, especially here in Colorado of late, but have failed Republicans even nationwide. And that instead we need to be on the attack, on the offensive, not quick to apologize for every perceived wrong or mistake or misstatement or whatever. Last question. I know you've been very generous with your time, and people are just writing in who are involved in the Republican Party. I get that elections are now won outside of the party structure, but the party still has an important role in organizing precincts and having district captains and getting out the vote. And it just seems like we still have so many open and vacant seats. And it's not like there's anything you can do about that. If people don't step up, if people don't volunteer, then you don't have the manpower you need. What can we do to make sure that, you know, Democrats in 2018, they had a website at the precinct level. We don't even have district captains in some precincts. What do you have any encouragement, any guidance for how we can make sure that the GOP, in its limited role, can do everything possible?
Yeah, Randy, I appreciate the opportunity because I think one of the keys is everybody needs to get out and vote no on CC. It is a critical issue for Colorado, and it's a critical way for conservatives in this state to say enough's enough with Governor Polis. We can't sit back and not allow that to happen. And secondly, the county parties are absolutely the key in terms of the grassroots, and we need to make sure that folks Google their county party and volunteer, try to be a precinct committee person. Don't complain about how your Republican elected officials are acting if you're not willing to spend a couple of hours a month helping get elected or get Republicans elected, and then you will have a voice. Those Republican elected officials will be coming to you and asking for your support. You'll have the opportunity to give input in how you'd like to see, and it absolutely affects how people vote in Washington, D.C., in Denver, and how they conduct themselves as county commissioners and sheriffs and in other positions.
Final question, limited time. Will Donald Trump be making an appearance in Colorado?
He has spoken at the Air Force Academy graduation. He will absolutely be making appearances. I've invited him. The chairwoman of the RNC, I believe, will be joining us at some point in the near future. I would love to see the president and vice president in Colorado as much as possible.
But your perspective, your belief is that that will happen at least once between now and 2020?
Absolutely.
Okay. Very, very good.
Yes.
Well, Ken, always generous with your time. Appreciate it. We'll be in touch. Good luck to you, and stay strong, my friend.
Thanks, Randy. Appreciate it. Take care.
Right. Bye-bye. Late on the break. We'll get there now. Phones are loaded up. John Andrews in the 8 o'clock hour. Randy Corcoran on the Peter Boyle Show at 710 KNUS.
Download our free mobile app and listen to 710 KNUS on your phone or hear us at home or at work on your Alexa device. Details at 710KNUS.com. Message and data rates apply. The Peter Boyle Show.
We're back. People are fired up. If we don't get to your call in this segment, we'll do you first out in the 8 o'clock hour before we go to our interview with John Andrews. But right now, it is time for our daily check-in with the good people over there at Alpine Planning Group. This morning, we've got Gabe. Good morning.
Good morning, Randy. Happy Wednesday, sir.
Starting
off relatively flat this morning, but in the green nonetheless. I got the Dow up currently up 64. NASDAQ's up 7, and the S&P is up 3. Some big names actually reporting less than stellar earnings. Caterpillar being hit by things like the trade war. You got Boeing dealing with their 737 crisis, and then names like McDonald's reporting less than stellar earnings. But overall, Randy, as we kind of continue through this earnings season, most companies have been reporting better than earnings. I'd say to the tune about 80% so far of the companies that have reported. But kind of like your interview with Rep Buck there, some great things. Some uncertainty in the economy, whether it be trade, immigration, kind of trying to figure out how to get some growth here. Volatility is going to continue into this next year, and so I think a big thing for investors, especially pre- and post-retirees, is really structuring that income. As we kind of go into the election year, things are obviously going to be a little bit bumpy, but if your listeners have some questions, want to sit down with someone, have them give Alpine Planning Group a call, Brian, Amy, and I would love to sit down with them.
Just like a pro, Gabe, really do appreciate your time this morning, and Stefan, we'll talk with one of you guys tomorrow morning.
Awesome. Looking forward to it, sir. Have a great weekend.
You too. Alpine Planning Group, a comprehensive financial planning firm committed to helping you improve your long-term financial success. Investing is a matter of trust. They are prepared to earn yours. Call Alpine Planning Group at 303-843-0918 or alpineplanninggroup.com.
Securities and investment advisory services offered through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA SIPC and registered investment advisor. Alpine Planning Group and Woodbury Financial Services, Inc. are not affiliated entities. 14 West Dry Creek Circle, Littleton, Colorado, 80120.
Comments are all over the board. You know, great interview with Ken Buck, a very positive message. People need to turn out, get these district captainships, these precincts filled and handled. Time is short. Let's go. Rah, rah. And I feel some of that as well. You know, if you're complaining but not doing something right now, then you are, part of the problem. And then there are the other ones, you know. That was not the lynching. Oh, did I use that word? That was not the lynching that I expected of Ken Buck with these votes against the president. And, you know, you weren't hard enough on him. And, you know, these are the people that are in the job right now. We have to maintain the relationships. I hope I conveyed to the congressman my belief that instead of trying to change this president, a president who, for the first time in political office, attained the presidency against Republicans, never Trumpers, Democrats, the media, everybody. He attained the presidency and continues an amazing track record of success. He's the guy who said, you know, it's like putting on a suit dealing with these people for me. And I respect that. He is teaching Republicans what it takes to win now in 2019 and especially in 2020. And yet they're still trying to change him. He needs to be softer with his language. Why couldn't Republicans come out and say, Democrats used the word lynching 1,000 times during the Clinton impeachment hearings. Black Democrats, white people were lynched. It's Democrats who ran the KKK did the lynching in the Deep South. Why don't they have that response? I just don't know. All right, let's see if we can squeeze in Frosty before the end of the break, the end of this segment, and anybody else, we'll get to you on the other side. Frosty, thanks for waiting.
Yeah, Randy, thank you very much. I want to bring up two very important points. It's been over 20 years, and whether it was Boehner or Ryan or Pelosi or McConnell or Schumer or any of those top leaders, no one has moved to pass E-Verify to force all employers to absolutely hire American citizens. And the second part of that is no one is enforcing the law internally. U.S. Code 8, Section 1324, states that if you hire an illegal alien, it's against you can't hire them, you can't house them, and you can't transport them, and it is a $2,000 fine and up to 5 years in prison. And that law is already on the books, has been there for 20 years, and whether it's a Cory Gardner or a Bennett or McConnell or any of those people, David Perlmutter, you name it, they're not enforcing the laws, and you can build all the fences you want. There will be people that are going to get people across that border, and Marriott and all of these big corporations that are making sure those laws aren't passed, we're the ones that are paying for it. We're paying for it with the children we have, the millions of kids that we have to school K through 12, the free lunches, which are not free. We're paying for it. The medical care, you know, the anchor babies. None of our congressional critters up there have done anything to stop this invasion of our country. And it's frustrating because we already have the laws on the books and they are not enforcing them. Therefore, we are have become the victims of this invasion. And I suspect, with and I've talked to Peter about this 15, 20 years ago.
Frosty, I'm going to stick you back on hold. You can finish your point on the other side. Joe, we'll squeeze you back in as well. And we'll be joined by Colorado conservative Republican statesman John Andrews in the 8 o'clock hour. Randy Corcoran here for Peter Boyles. Stay with us.